The Naturalistic Decision-Making Podcast with Brian Moon and Laura Militello. This podcast series brings you interviews with leading NDM researchers who study and support people who make decisions under stress.
Welcome to the Naturalistic Decision-Making Podcast. This is Brian Moon from Perigene Technologies.
And I'm Laura Militello from Applied Decision Science. Our special guest today is Ron Bazayan. Ron is a training specialist with Nova Chemicals in Joffre, Alberta. He has worked for 35 years in the petrochemical industry. He's qualified on 4 control panels and was involved with the commissioning and startup of a new facility. In addition to his operational experience, Ron has been a training specialist for the last 18 years. He trains console operators with the use of a training simulator and manages the training systems for his organization. He's a member of the Center for Operator Performance, a coalition of industry, vendors, and researchers that apply human factors methods to support human performance in petrochemical operations. He recently authored the book, Troubleshooting Tactics, How Process Operators Make Critical Decisions. In this book, he applies naturalistic decision-making models to the complex world of petrochemical operations. Welcome, Ron. Thank you for joining us. We're really excited to have you here today.
Yes, and thank you for the invite. I'm quite honored to be amongst the distinguished guests that you have interviewed for this podcast.
So if you've listened to some of the podcasts, you'll know that I always like to hear how people got started. So I wondered if you would tell us a little bit about your early career. How did you start out?
Well, our family moved in the area back in, 1976? My dad was a carpenter, and he started working on construction on the first site here. And then that evolved into I worked with him on the construction of the second site at Joffre here, and then eventually started operating in that site later in 1988. And part of it was, inspired by a bunch of friends of mine that got into the industry of the operating aspect of it. And so I decided to try that out. They didn't seem to be quite happy with that part of the industry.
Well, wait, so your dad helped build some of the facilities there?
Yes. Yeah, so he worked on the first one and the second one, and I worked on the second one as well that I eventually ended up operating.
Wow, that's fascinating. And so were you an apprentice carpenter with your dad?
I was a laborer, so I worked with a variety of people helping them out. Surveyors, carpenters, and I also ran the tool crib for probably a year as well.
Wow, okay. And so then some of your buddies were working as operators, like field operators or console operators, or what kind of work did you start with?
Yes, operators, after they started up these facilities, there was a couple of them that got jobs here. And so after a few years of construction, I decided to go back to school and get a chemical process operation certificate, and then was hired on here in 1988.
Okay, so I think a lot of our listeners probably don't know much about what it means to be an operator in a petrochemical plant. So I'm wondering if you can just tell us a little bit about that job. What are some of the complexities and stressors that operators manage?
Yeah, and that's probably one of our challenges in attracting new people is to help them to understand what this job is all about. It's very abstract. You can drive by our facilities, but that doesn't really tell you a lot about what goes on here and what the job is like. So I'll try to give a little bit of insight into maybe complexity of it. So our panel operators are using a computer interface to monitor the process and make any changes that are required. And a control panel can actually have up to 10,000 data inputs into it. Not that they have to interface with these every day. The engineers deal with some of those, but just give an idea of the complexity. They can have over 150 controllers that they might need to manage, which includes some large compressors, distillation towers, lots of pumps, quite a bit of equipment. And of course, there's a lot of automation, so it's not like they're having to intervene on these controllers all the time, as long as everything is nice and steady. And to add to the complexity, they like to design them very efficient. So that means there's lots of cross impacts. They use energy from one system to transfer it to the other. And so when we have an issue in one system, it's usually impacting 3 or 4 systems. So that challenges our panel operators at times to figure out where the problem might be. And then to mitigate it, they might have to respond to more than one system. And day to day, they might be removing equipment from service to complete regenerations, decokes, but they also are responsible for safely shutting down the process if needed or when needed for maintenance, and also starting up the process, which both of those can be very complex. and requires more than one panel operator to achieve. And we do have procedures for most of these situations, and they are very helpful, but our processes are too complex to write a procedure for every situation. So there's definitely some decision-making that has to be done by our operators. And sometimes the process does not follow the procedure, and then they have to intervene and come up with a new solution.
Right. And so I, as you know, I just recently got a chance to interview some folks and learn a little bit about this industry. And so one thing I had never thought about before were the stakes. Like, safety really is super important here. So if you miss something, there's real possibility for harm.
Yeah. So we do have lots of safety systems. There's definitely some concerns. It is the petrochemical business. Our operators are very trained on the hazards and how to mitigate them. We have safety systems built into the process to try to handle any abnormal situations. And the other part of it is production. So we take pride in our reliability. We want to keep the plant running and producing. And if there's mistakes made or if there's process problems, our operators are expected to intervene and try to keep production up and not to make any mistakes while they're intervening on the process. And a plant outage can result in million or more dollars of lost income because of the production loss. So there is definitely a lot of pressure on our panel operators and outside operators as well to be very competent and make the right decisions.
Yeah, right. And so the other thing I had not thought about before I did this work was the amount of uncertainty. So when something unusual happens, figuring out that troubleshooting piece is sometimes it's straightforward, but sometimes it's really not.
Yeah, and we do have emergency procedures for, you know, each panel probably has at least 10 of them, like cooling water outages or power failures, certain machine trips. And we practice those on our simulator to perfect those procedures. We automate those as well. But there are still times that we have certain upsets that the panel operators are definitely having to make decisions and work through problems.
Yeah, so in the work I did recently, I found it just fascinating that so you have these really skilled, highly trained people managing this unbelievably complex process where unexpected things happen, not completely infrequently. And so part of your role is in training folks to do this. And I'm wondering if you'll just tell us a little bit about your training approach.
Well, we're fortunate on our site. We have simulators. They're high fidelity, dynamic, and they mimic the process very closely. So our operators get the opportunity to go through malfunctions, the known ones for sure. They can go through a startup, a shutdown on the simulator and practice our emergency procedures. And also we give them other malfunctions that we may not have proceduralized. And on the simulator, we can fail pretty much any piece of equipment, any transmitter, control valves, shut off pumps. So we give them quite a variety of situations to respond to. So if something actually does happen to them, that they are familiar with dealing with pressure situations and developing a thought process that they can handle that.
Nice. And so in your book, you really unpack a lot of the cognitive psychology and mental models. And in your training approach, do you share that with the operators, that perspective piece?
Yeah. So before I wrote the book, we developed a troubleshooting course. And the book is based on some of that, although I evolved it some more. I did more research, read a few more books. But we're still delivering the troubleshooting course on site, and that gets into some of the basics of that, the cognitive psychology piece, decision-making, tacit knowledge, developing mental models.
Yeah, Ron, that's interesting. I am curious about, to sort of reiterate Laura's question, so the NDM perspective is one that you can teach people about, but you can also teach them strategies and skills for performance. And so I'm always curious if it's what people's perspective is with regard to how much you think you need to convey the perspective in order for people to be able to contextualize the kinds of strategies that you suggest.
Yeah, so in our course, the troubleshooting course, we do get into Gary Klein's recognition prime decision model. We talk about pattern recognition, about tacit knowledge, and also some of the tools to help develop those scenario-based training. And a lot of these tools were from research with the Center for Operator Performance that we work with, Gary and others on Joseph Borders, quite a few of them. And so we incorporate those into the training. So we will go through some concepts and then put them through some exercises that kind of highlight the importance of those concepts that they can practice them. The shadow box tool is a good one for helping them to develop a decision-making process. It steps them through the different stages of decision-making. So that's can be very helpful as a starting point. And then we get them into group exercises using another tool we developed, the COP decision-making exercises, where they problem solve as a group, which is common as well for operations. And also on the simulator, when we're putting them through malfunctions, we do discuss where they get their information, help them with pattern recognition on picking up cues and how they work their way through problems. And some of that is definitely helping me to help others understand how they work through problems and decision-making as well. Our other trainers on site are familiar with this information, and they use it to improve their training as well.
Okay, so it sounds like you actually do go through the content that we all get so excited about in terms of what NDM is and what the philosophy is, the principles that sort of underlie how we go about doing the research and the training. I'm curious, for folks who are more operationally oriented, how does that go over? Do they get interested in it? Does it seem like too much information? Is it background that they feel like doesn't have much value? I'm just curious what the reaction is.
Well, from our troubleshooting course, we've had a lot of positive comments about it. Some that it's the best course they've ever taken. And I think they do resonate with the concepts that we talk about on cognitive psychology concepts, just because they've been through enough experiences. They understand that the information in the manuals, although a good starting point, and the procedures, it doesn't help them with every decision they have to make. So they're quite receptive to looking at new tools on how to build that expertise. And some of the scenario-based training definitely leads it to that. So it's actually been very positive, well-received from our operations. And even from my book, I've gotten quite a few comments, and basically around that as well, that nobody's covered the cognitive psychology, the critical decision-making when there's time constraints in any troubleshooting training they've had, or our literature in our industry anyway.
Do you find that sort of the way that the theories and methods are explained is a bit more, I don't know, palatable, for lack of a better word, but a bit more relatable than, you know, you might see in a psych book with a bunch of different experiments that have findings that may or may not be related?
Yeah, I tried to interpret the information. You know, even though my name's on the book, I sort of feel more like an interpreter of information that I've gathered over the years and from my experience as well. But yeah, I did try to keep it into language that operators are familiar with, although we do discuss some new terms. But I believe it's been well received. I don't get too many questions around the concepts.
Nice. So another thing I was struck by as I was reading your book is that you, I feel like, make really good use of stories from your own experience to kind of illustrate some of the concepts that maybe were developed with firefighters or law enforcement. You translate those into, here's what it looks like in petrochemical industry, or here's what happened to me one time. I wondered if you have a story you could share right now.
Oh, yeah, sure, actually, because there was some, as I was learning about this information, I would reflect back on some past upsets. And yeah, well, there's a few. How much time do we have? So probably the one that got me the most interested, and as any good motivators, feeling that you didn't do very well during something or felt like you maybe failed, it's always a good motivator for improvement. And that happened not long after we started up a new facility here. They were updating some control systems, and one of the control modules failed, and we lost about 120 controllers, which mostly went closed, which is a pretty big event in a petrochemical facility. So I was the tech leader on shift, and I was in a meeting. I was called in that we had a big upset. I walked in the control room, and trying to make sense at that time, I was very responsive. I wasn't anticipating anything. I had trouble gathering enough information. There was pages of alarms. It was a fairly major event. I think at that time it was, the cost ended up being $6 million. And there wasn't necessarily anything we could do to stop it. It was out of our hands. We had no control at that point. The safety systems of the plant kicked in. For the most part, managed itself. Our panel operator shut down one of the feed compressors and the event was over. But what really struck me during that event is that if something else would have happened, how I would have been able to manage that, already feeling in a state of being overwhelmed by the number of alarms and whole response to the process. And I also realized that my focus was on keeping the process running rather than when it is time to shut it down. So I did have some key learnings after that event. And I also realized I had to process information faster. I became quicker at thinking through process problems, more of a linear fashion, and to intensify my focus a little bit more, which that was kind of the start of my decision-making development. Getting into Gary Klein's recognition prime decision later on definitely helped me. And I also learned to gather information from the graphics. It can be challenging when you're standing behind somebody trying to gather information over their shoulder. They might switch graphics before you're even finished. So I became a little more adept at picking up on the key process variables while the graphics might be changed right before. So that was another learning. Yeah, so that one left me feeling that I needed to do better. And so definitely my thought process improved. But when I came across, I was asked to do a study with Shadowbox on the simulator several years later when I became a trainer. And we were testing Shadowbox. And then I met Gary Klein, and I had started reading his book of Sources of Power, and I continued on. So I learned more about the recognition prime decision, tacit knowledge, and all those other things from the NDM movement. And so having that new information, I reflected back on another incident that I was involved in several years later, but in a different process. And I don't know that I could get into explaining it completely, but there was several decisions I had to make. And if they were made incorrectly, it would have resulted in us having to reduce feed by a third, and we would have been flaring all the production for a couple hours. So there was definitely some big impacts to it. And we were successful getting through that. We prevented very closely from kept the production on and managed the upset. So I went back and reflected after and looked back at the decisions I made and realized that, no, I didn't go through and compare a bunch of options for many of these decisions. Although there is occasionally, you know, I might compare a couple, but for the most part, I looked back and it was based on my experience, information I was picking up, that I went the right direction. And I concluded that this Klein guy really knows what he's talking about. And that's how we're actually making decisions out in the plant. And if we got time for one more story.
Yeah.
So, and that was probably a couple of years after this event. I was covering the panel on the weekends. We were a little short of coverage. So that gave me an opportunity to refresh what it was to be a panel operator in the hot seat. And we had a level controller fail on the feed drum into the plant, which plant doesn't run without any feed, and it was drifting high, and it was cutting the feed back. And that time, I was more trusting of my tacit knowledge. I stepped in, took control of the valve very quickly, and it did make me realize that I did trust in my tacit knowledge, but also that even after I made that move, I still had to validate that it was the right move, and I did some checking and following up on it. And so I made the right choice, fortunately, and prevented a major process upset. Later, I looked back on, I ran this scenario through the simulator, and from that data, I had about 2 minutes before it was going to cause a major process swing if I wouldn't have responded to it, and probably 5 minutes if I hadn't made a response that we would have had to shut the plant down.
Wow.
So that really validated for me that these concepts worked well, and understanding them definitely helped with my decision.
In the moment, did you know it was that urgent when you were acting?
Well, I didn't realize how much time I had to respond. I knew I didn't have a lot of time to respond.
Hmm.
Yeah, and in reflection, even though I didn't consciously understand everything that was going wrong, I knew that we needed feed in the plant. I knew that there wasn't anything wrong with the pipeline. There was no indicators of that. And I knew that we couldn't have changed feed into the plant where the furnaces draw off it, that they could have changed that quickly either. That what was happening just didn't make sense. And so I made a choice to take control of the valve and stabilize the process and then validate it after to make sure that the direction I went was working, or if it needed some adjustment, of course.
Wow. Okay. So this is a classic example, right? There's a lot of uncertainty. but there were a few things you were pretty certain about. You knew that you needed a feed. There's nothing wrong with that pipeline. And that was enough for you to think, well, I can take control of this valve, open it up, and then figure out what's going on, make sure I did the right thing.
Yes. Yep. There typically is some follow-up needed. I think on David Wood's podcast, he made a comment to that we hedge our bets, and then we have to check to make sure that we've made the right decision. Or maybe we haven't committed to a decision. We maybe have made a direction, and then we have to adjust it from there, possibly. And I may have had to decrease the flow in the valve or increase it based on what was happening in the process, and maybe respond to any other process impacts when we're responding to those type of incidents.
Yeah, in the healthcare world, they talk about those as hypotheses. So I gave the person fluids, which I knew wouldn't hurt them. And if it helped them, if it lowered their blood pressure, that would tell me this was what was going on. So that's kind of what you were doing here. Like, you knew opening the valve wouldn't hurt things. And if it behaved the way you expected, that would tell you something about what was actually going on and what to do next.
Yeah, that's right. Increasing the flow back up based on the information I had. And there is, in that knockout as well, there is a high level trip that would have potentially kicked in if I overshot and would have put it in the safe place, safe for that vessel, not for the whole production. But anyway, it didn't get to that point, of course.
Ron, you mentioned Dave Wood's podcast, and first of all, we don't mention other podcasts on this podcast, but since you mentioned him and his colleagues in the resilience engineering community, I'm curious about, they talk a lot about incidents, of course, but also making use of those incidents, and you've just told us a couple of stories, which are a great example of incidents. I'm curious about how your organization uses incidents. What sort of format are they put in? How are they made available? Do you wrap them into training? All those sorts of things. How do you all use incidents?
Well, typically, when we have a process problem like this, we do have an incident investigation process, and that is all stored in a database, and that's the more formal process. Now, from an operations perspective, we may capture those learnings a little differently and get into the actual operator's response more. So we may end up updating procedures based on them. In our manuals, training manuals, we have what we call relay experiences, and these are just write-ups based on the learnings of past incidents. So it's kind of like storytelling. So we try to keep that information updated in there. On our troubleshooting course, we've used past incidents there as examples to put our operators through some scenarios so they get a feel for, you know, and we can talk about to give them a little bit of story and background on these incidents as we're going through them. And we also will practice some of the incidents on our simulator training when they come in for refresher training. And if we had something happen in the plant that they could all learn from, we'll actually put them through that scenario on the simulator so everybody's familiar with it and capture the learnings that we may have had from it. And even during simulator training, our trainers will share when we create a malfunction, it might be based on past incidents, maybe from a different process that we heard about. And then we can tell some stories and background information along that scenario as well, just to kind of get them more interested in problems they have to deal with and keep them a little background on it.
Yeah, I mean, we know that CDM is great for capturing incidents. I'm also curious if your folks get any guidance or maybe training, but at the very least guidance on how to capture incidents and what's important and how to structure them and that sort of thing?
Yeah, there is some training they have on when we capture incidents, and our shift supervisors will typically lead that discussion, or depending the type of incident, some of our coordinators that are on days will lead an incident investigation as well. So there's a whole process that might involve several groups even to input. And yeah, and there's definitely a guide on how to capture them.
Nice. Hey, I wanted to circle back to that first story you told, because that's really interesting. So in this story, you were not sitting at the console. You're in a meeting. You're a tech leader. And someone comes and gets you, and you walk out to that console, and there are hundreds of pages of alarms going off.
Well, there might have been only 20, but...
Okay. But a lot.
A lot, yeah.
And so... this console operator, so for folks who haven't been there, there are multiple, I don't know, 6 or 8 monitors with displays of all kinds of variables and controllers for this plant or this process. And so the operator is scanning that, looking for information, problem solving, and you're also trying to do the same thing, but the console operator is changing those displays as he's doing his own mental process. And so he may be changing the variable before you've actually looked at it or while you're still thinking about it. Is that what you said?
Yep, potentially.
So in this case, so you said the safety systems kicked in. Did you and the operator intervene? Like, tell me a little bit more about how that played out.
Oh, well, to start with, we were trying to understand the extent of the control system failure. But as I mentioned, there was at least 100 control valves that were impacted. And we didn't understand at first that there was just no way we could keep the process going, that we could interact with that many valves and recover. So that took some time to realize that this is an outage. And the panel operator arrived at that conclusion, and he tripped our feed compressor, which basically stops all the feed into the back end of the plant. And then we shut down, we isolate everything that's left, stabilize, and then figure out what the control, get the control system fixed. And then we're working on a restart process, which wouldn't be that day. It took a few days after the fact as well.
I see. Okay, so you're both focused on how to keep things going. And at some point, the operator realizes this is a shutdown. This is an outage. We need to shut this down.
Yes. Yeah. So when the process is designed, they look at each control valve and they decide, okay, if we were to lose the signal to this valve, which way should it fail? Do we stop the flow or do we let the valve open? And for most of those, valves closed. And so the flow had stopped in most parts of the process, and the effluent from the compressor was flaring. So the operator did choose to shut that compressor down, and then the other panel op would be pulling the furnace feed to stop the flaring.
And so you said when the incident was over and done, it really made you kind of think about your own thought process in that situation and what you might do differently in the future. Is that right?
Yes. So the one was that at the time my focus was on how to keep the process running. I should have been thinking more about when it was time to shut it down. That was one of the key learnings I had on that one. And yeah, and it did help me to, I had a little more intensity in my thought process so I could get through information faster. That was the only thing I could think of to do to improve my ability to handle upsets at the time, until I learned about the recognition prime decision model, which was definitely helpful too.
But I don't understand that piece, how you were able to speed up your information intake.
I don't know that I can explain that either. It's just, when you get put in a very challenging situation, you have to do better. And that was how I managed it. I knew I had to process information quicker and be more focused. It was an interesting experience after that. I realized that I was able to work through process faster than I used to. And that was just more from intensity than anything, I guess.
Interesting. And so in this situation, the panel operator's been sitting at the panel watching things unfold, has some kind of awareness or mental model of the plant or the process, and you've been in a meeting, like you're kind of walking into this cold, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I knew they were working on control systems that day, and they went through several without any problems. This one didn't go so well. Yeah, when I walked in, I didn't know, you know, that it was what this one control module, what it impacted on the process.
Yeah. So for you, if then you put your training hat on to help be prepared for this kind of situation, yeah, what do you think about that?
Well, and that's where I get into discussing, there's going to be times where you have to make a decision that you might have to shut the process down, that is the right direction to go, that you can't solve a problem or rectify the problem in the time that you're given. And have to consider that when you're in an event like that, that it's time to give up and take it into a safe shutdown space.
Okay, so that kind of reframing, it's not always about keep things going, but you need to be thinking carefully about when it's time to shut it down. Yeah,
no, and we are trained to keep the plant running to solve problems. That definitely is a high focus. And so we just occasionally have to take a step back and remember that sometimes it's best just to shut the process down.
So Ron, are there more direct and concrete ways where this particular incident has sort of worked its way back into the organization?
Well, definitely the people working on the control system. They learned a few things from that as well. They work with the vendor on how to prevent a reoccurrence. And the software updates, those you can't get away from. That's any software needs updating occasionally. And this software had been updated successfully in other plants. I don't know that I totally understand why this one control module had a problem with that update. But yeah, that incident definitely was written up. It's been shared. I hear our control folks talking about it anytime they do an update on the control system. And they've found ways to mitigate the effects of a switch like that as well.
And I guess the other kind of theme I hear is you're helping people be prepared that there are rules of thumb and there are procedures and those are all really important, but unexpected things are going to happen too. And you've got to be prepared for that.
Yeah. And they start working the panel some before they even come to simulator training with a backup with them. And they're kind of getting a feel for that. Even as outside operators, there's times they might be responding to some of the problems out there already. So they're starting to get a fairly good feel of about having to manage problems. And our procedures, for the most part, they are written up for managing day-to-day problems, how to take equipment out of service for maintenance, that type of thing. We do have some emergency and upset procedures. But as I mentioned, because of the complexity in the plant, they don't cover everything. And yeah, and we have to prepare our operators to be able to think through problems that they can't memorize every possible scenario. From being a simulator trainer for 18 years, there is never a lack of things to cause problems on for the panel operators to train on. Our processes are complex enough that I always find new ways to get them thinking about things.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, one of the things you bring to this community is kind of looking outside the petrochemical industry to cognitive psychology, to other places, just to bring ideas in to think about this differently and make it better. I'm wondering, are there any ideas or concepts where you've really struggled to get traction, things you really wanted to promote but just haven't quite caught on in the petrochemical industry yet?
Yeah, so I have been, for many years, I've been promoting simulator training, which is a really good scenario-based training tool. And I've gone to a few conferences and talked about our simulator program, simulator conferences, and tried to share the success we've had with our program and some of the other benefits that we get from it. But the other one I've been working on, and this is with the Center for Operator Performance too, is the value of scenario-based training. So I've definitely been promoting that. I've been invited a couple times to the Chief Power Engineering Education Conference here in Alberta to talk. And the first one was about decision-making. And that was actually quite well-received. These are the chief engineers that run these plants that are responsible for these processes in the province. So they have a lot of experience. They have a lot of education. And they were quite receptive to this. I believe I started the conversation off with, does anybody out there ever had to make a decision they didn't feel fully prepared for? And I believe most of them raised their hands. So they're well aware that it can be a challenge to manage sometimes and that we have to make decisions and solve problems, with not necessarily with the end solution in mind. So I've been trying to promote scenario-based training and definitely within the Center for Operator Performance, trying to encourage the other companies to adopt it to the extent we have. The last meeting, I shared how we've incorporated all this information into our troubleshooting course. I believe there were some companies there who were quite receptive and are adopting those more. The other thing I've just started to work on, and you were on the panel discussion with me about graphics, Laura, at the last meeting, and I was promoting how to develop interfaces or graphics for operators that can help them with their pattern recognition skills. Currently, I don't feel I've developed a really good overview that helps our panel operators with that. So I would like us to look at that some more. And it is a big ask in a way because the hardware of our current consoles don't really allow for us to do that. So I'm opening the discussion up for a future possible updates that we can incorporate some of this stuff. And one reason I brought it up at our Center for Operator Performance meeting was just to get people thinking about it more. And even the day-to-day designing of consoles that they consider, okay, how can we help our panel operators with more pattern recognition and utilize their tacit knowledge?
Yeah, this is a really complex problem. So you've got this really sophisticated machinery that's super dynamic, and you're trying to represent all of that in this 2D display in a way that's going to help these operators really envision what's happening in the 3D world. and be able to very quickly recognize something unusual is happening. It's a tough problem.
Yeah, and the other part of that, the reason I like the idea of a larger overview than we're currently using, and I believe there might be some processes that are doing this a little bit more, but it encourages the panel operators to be looking at an overview, glancing at it more frequently. Currently, if they're not going through the different graphics, like in their more detailed graphics, they might miss a problem until an actual alarm comes in. You know, although they'd go in an interface once in a while, but it isn't a constant scanning. So if they had an overview, they could glance up there, and if we developed it right, they could see some process deviations immediately and start thinking about what could be causing it. And more so, the whole system would be up there, and if they seen a deviation on one system, then noticed a deviation on the other system, they could see the connection between those two and would help them figure out the problem a little sooner, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is a great one. I think the devil is in the details, as they say, figuring out how to create that really effective overview that's going to help you see those patterns and know where to dig deeper. It's a tough problem, but it's definitely worth pursuing. I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of focus on technology to aid with problem solving and alerting the operators. And there is some great stuff being developed, but I still think humans have some really good abilities that we could draw on that would help us. A combination of the two would be our best way to maintain production in these processes and to respond to upsets.
So Ron, you shared a personal detail earlier with the unique connection you have with your father in your workplace. I'm wondering if you could share one thing more about yourself that the audience probably doesn't know.
Well, this relates to my father, actually, because after we moved to this area, we built our own house. As I mentioned, my father was a carpenter, so as a teenager, I got to experience housing construction and probably started off my problem-solving and decision-making skills at that time. And I built a couple other houses with him, so I think after I started working out here, I decided to build my own house. So I designed the layout and everything, and I built the house. I did all the carpentry work with some help from my dad and my father-in-law and a few other people. And so that was a very busy year.
Awesome. I will not be sharing this podcast with my wife, by the way, for that reason alone.
So Ron, I had just one last question that's kind of a fun one. I know you have really deep expertise in petrochemical industry, but if you could achieve expertise in anything, you don't have to go study, you don't have to practice, you're just instantly an expert, what would it be?
One other area I'm quite curious about is health. And actually, I came up with this concept called a health mindset. And so what that would look like, and I don't have the expertise completely for this, but it would be a knowledge of all healthcare options from traditional, natural, physiotherapy, nutritional, mental health, acupuncture, spiritual, exercise, everything that might impact a person's health. So although I've done some reading and exploring of all those issues, I think I'm still very far away. And the reason I'm interested in that many is I think they would all contribute to our health. And sometimes those different groups don't get together and share information and maybe come up with a more overall approach to health.
That's a fascinating idea. No one's ever said anything like that. I love it. Yeah. Well, on that note, Ron, it's really been a pleasure to speak with you today. I want to thank you for joining us.
Yes, and thank you very much for having me. Made me think a lot about kind of the progress I've made over the years, and it was great to reflect on it again.
Thanks, Ron. It's been really fun. And for the NDM podcast, I'm Laura Militello.
And I'm Brian Moon. Learn more about naturalistic decision making and where to follow us by visiting naturalisticdecisionmaking.org.